So I want you to imagine that you're living in another country, you're all by yourself, you just moved to this other country, you don't speak the language very well, and so you're in a country all by yourself, you don't speak the language very well, you're fairly lonely, right? And the neighbors next door, through the little bit that you speak and some charades, they invite you over for dinner, right? So you go to the family next door, you're at their house, the hostess of the family, she is making tortillas on the stove, and a whole crowd of kids and extended family, this big family table set, and there's all these plates set out, and they have almost what looks like a stew, like a really thick stew, but it's on a flat plate, and there's no silverware. And so you're just sitting there at this table, and you're watching everybody, and you're thinking, well, what do I do, right? Like, how do I eat this thing that's put in front of me? Johnny is going like this. You know, he's just going to lift the whole plate up to his mouth. You may have some other strategy, but I've been in that, just about that exact spot myself before. And I can tell you, if you're in another place, there's a very definite thing that you should do. If you're in another country, this is a great tip on how to survive, is you don't do anything very quickly, right? You just wait and you watch what somebody who knows what they're doing, let them do it first. And then this is not third grade math. Like, it's totally fine to copy, right? This is real life, okay? You just watch somebody who knows what they're doing and you just copy, right? So you see somebody take it, you know, roll back the towel, pull off one of those hot tortillas, and this has gotten firmer. Oh, it's sat out here since, yeah, so toss it back and forth like this. You might not know why they're doing it, but if you just held it in your hand, you would know why, because tortillas are supposed to be eaten when they're fresh and really hot. We don't do that very often. But so you do this, and then they would tear it in quarters, probably. And they wouldn't throw it on the floor, but tear it in quarters, and then you would grab some of that food in front of you and eat it. And Rixie had this like, oh, like, most of you are like, I've never would have thought of that, right? I would have not tried to do it. But when you see other people doing it, and maybe don't watch the like 4-year-old of the family, like watch someone else and then just copy them, right? Just do what they do. And so it would look something like this, right? And even though we don't normally eat that way, every meal I've ever eaten that way has been delicious. You know, so I would gladly eat that way again for lunch today if someone offered it to me. So the lesson of why we started that introduction is when you don't know what to do, it is very wise to just watch somebody who does know what they're doing and just copy. You maybe don't understand why you're flipping the tortilla back and forth between your hands, but as long as you copy what someone who knows what they're doing is doing, yeah, you won't look bad. You won't look like a fool. You won't be a fool, actually. If you do what a wise person does, like, that's basically the start of wisdom, right? So today in the sermon, we're going to be talking about just that, just copying, and we're going to pick the wisest person, the best person ever to copy, right? Jesus does all these things that honestly, we don't understand all the stuff of why he did. If anyone comes in and says they understand everything that Jesus does, like, they are a prideful person, but they're not right, right? And sometimes the best thing we can do is just say, I saw Jesus do this, and I'm going to copy. I'm just going to copy what he did, and that's good enough for me. So today we're going to look at a particular story. This is called the Transfiguration. We'll get into what that means. But as we read that story, I want to pull out a single detail, and we'll focus on that. Okay, so let's read this story first. So it comes in Mark chapter 9, verse 2, if you want to read along with us. It says, after 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain. So you picture this, 4 guys walking up a mountain together. Use your imagination. The wind's blowing. So they're on top of a mountain. It's colder up there than when they started. And they're all alone. There, Jesus was transfigured before them. That's a word I've never heard outside of church or outside of the Bible. But what it means is that Jesus revealed his full glory. So this is what Jesus looks like in heaven. Okay? This is not just a regular person. There's no, if Jesus was transfigured walking down the street, like everyone would stop what they're doing and notice, right? This is not a normal occurrence. Mark only gives us a particular detail about it. He says his clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. You might think, like, of all the things you could pick, like, Jesus was probably literally glowing and probably other stuff as well. Why do you pick out the color? You tell us about the color of his clothes. That seems weird. Why is that the detail? Well, if you had ever seen a color for the first time, it probably would stick out to you too. I mean, what he's describing here is a different color. It's like it's white, but like whiter than white. So I don't know what that looks like, to be honest. But Mark says that's what it was like. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. So these two incredible people from the Old Testament come and meet with Jesus. They come from heaven to meet him. Verse 5, Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it's good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Verse 6, he did not know what to say. They were so frightened. So as you're imagining this, maybe that changes the tone of people's voices. Peter, James, and John are frightened as this all is happening. Verse 7, then a cloud appeared and covered them, and a voice came from the cloud. Now, often through the Old Testament, when God the Father shows up, he shows up in this form. He shows up as a cloud, and he speaks out of it. Okay? So God is physically present in this scene. And what does he say? He says, "This is my Son, whom I love. Listen to him." Verse 8, suddenly when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. Now, Transfiguration's an important text, and it appears in the Bible four different times. And if you notice that first slide that was up the blue one there with four, the series we're in right now, it's called Four Details. And we're going to look at the Transfiguration stories throughout the Bible. And each week we're going to pull out something to kind of explore, something to say, this is a little detail that we want to know more about. Because Jesus is worth copying, right? So we want to figure out how to copy him. What did he do? How do we be like him? And so today, the specific detail I want to point out to you came from that very first verse that we read, verse 2. It says that Jesus took Peter, James, and John. He took only three guys. We know Jesus had 12 disciples that he'd appointed. He had even a bigger crowd of disciples, and then he had multitudes that he would talk to. But Jesus says, "I just want you, you, and you. Come with me." And this is a pattern that Jesus shows throughout the New Testament. These three guys, Peter, James, and John, he takes them with him places he doesn't take anyone else. They're like the inner circle for Jesus. So when we're thinking about copying Jesus, something maybe you haven't thought of copying before, but is this idea of four people. That Jesus decided one of the best ways to use his time here on earth was to spend it in a group of four people. Yes, he had the 12 disciples. Yes, he spent some time with multitudes. But he spent a lot of time with just these three other folks. So today we're going to be exploring, like, what is so special? Why three other people? Why was that important? This is the first question that comes to my mind, at least. Why was that a big deal? And then assuming we stick with that it is a big deal, my next question would be, how do we go about doing that sort of thing? So that's where we're headed today in the sermon. Let's look at this first idea of why three other people. Why, you know, what's good for three? Wouldn't it be good for 3,000 or for 300,000? Like, why not just have a giant crowd and be transfigured in front of them? So to get to this idea of sometimes we can have a much more significant impact with a smaller circle, I want to quote Billy Graham here. He's talking in The Master Plan of Evangelism. He gets asked a question of, "Billy, if you were the pastor of a large church, what would you do?" And so here's how Billy Graham responded to that question. He says, "I think one of the first things I would do would be to get a small group of 8 or 10 or 12 people around me that would meet a few hours a week and pay the price. It would cost them something in time and effort." So what Billy's talking about here, he's saying, even though I have this big, giant group of people at church, I would take just a segment of them, 8 or 10 or 12 people, And they would have to invest some time and some effort with me. Why is he going to do that? I would share with them everything I have over a period of years. Then I would actually have 12 ministers among the lay people who could in turn take 8 or 10 or 12 more and teach them. So even though this seems like a really small thing to do, spend years with a small group of people, you could see how over time this would have a huge impact. Billy Graham reproduces himself in 8 or 10 or 12 people, and then at the end of a few years you've got 13 Billy Grahams, and then at the end of 3 more years, assuming everybody works out, but that's never how it goes, but the math, you know, 12 times 12, if you remember the little charts, that's as far as anyone ever makes you memorize. That's 144. So I don't know that it would work out that way, but 6 years, maybe 144. I have no idea what 12 times 144 is for 9 years out. But you start to see how, wow, that could be a bigger deal than just talking to a multitude of people. It goes on and says, I know one or two churches that are doing that, and it's revolutionizing the church. Christ, I think, set the pattern. So Billy Graham's saying, I'm looking at Jesus when I see this pattern of investing in 12 people. Jesus spent most of his time with 12 men. He didn't spend it with a great crowd. In fact, every time he had a great crowd, it seems to me that there weren't too many results. This is Billy Graham's take on Jesus' ministry. His most important ministry was to those 12, not to a crowd. The great results, it seems to me, came to this personal interview and in the time he spent with his 12. Now, I know what Billy Graham's talking about there is about the 12 disciples, and I'm taking it a step further with just the Peter, James, and John, but I think it still plays out here that there's something really powerful that can't be done with thousands of people or even hundreds of people. It could be done in a much smaller set of people that you go much deeper with, right? So if you're like a maximizer type of person, if one thing's good, then you want to get even better, right? So if you're like, okay, if thousands are not so good, and if 12, man, Billy Graham likes 12, and Jesus seemed to even like doing it with just 3 better, maybe you want to go even further, right? Think like, well, let's just go all the way. Just go down to 1-to-1, you know, just mentoring people. Isn't that the best? Isn't that the most fruitful? So when we get to this idea of mentoring, kind of the smaller than what Jesus did, it's what a lot of us do. I've done a lot of mentoring in my past. Here at Maywood, when it comes to like becoming a small group leader, how does that work? Normally what we do is say, join a small group and then get apprenticed, like a mentor relationship with one of our leaders, and then become a small group leader. That's how we do it. It's a good system. I don't know that it's the best way to impact people, though, is one-on-one. So here's a weird thing I kind of stumbled into backwards, and then I noticed, like, oh, Jesus does it this way. It's probably a better way to do it. Because I've mentored people a lot. The first person I mentored, I was just a teenager when I was mentoring them, you know? And so I get to see sometimes what happens to people 10 years down the road after you've mentored them. I've seen people totally walk away from Jesus that I've mentored. I've seen people have great success with Jesus. I've seen a lot of things in between. But somewhat along the lines of what Billy Graham was talking about, I started doing this thing called flight training with about a dozen people here at Maywood, where we really invest really heavily in those folks, trying to go deeper with them. But Billy Graham's example, he says, I would ask something of those people. I asked something of the flight training folks, and with me as a leader at least, a lot of times it would dwindle from about 12 people at the start to about 4 at the end of it. You know, we'd lose a lot of folks along the way. And so what I wound up having, though, is I'd led a lot of small groups in my life. I hadn't led a lot of groups of 5 until I was leading flight training. And what I discovered is that that's a different dynamic than a group of 8 or a group of 10. You wouldn't think that's that different of a dynamic, 5 people as opposed to 8 people. It is a lot different. And it's a lot different than one-on-one as well. So I may be losing some of you. I can see the expressions on some of your faces. So why does this all matter? All of us want to have an impact on other people, but all of us too, we want to be changed, right? We came to church today because we want to be better people, right? It's the way Jesus did things. That's how we get the most change, right? how we impact people the most and how we get impacted the most is by following that example. So real quick on the one-to-one, what happens? When I'm meeting with just one other person and I'm mentoring them, there's this weird dynamic of, oh, you're the mentor and you're so great, and I'm here mostly to just like get a nugget of wisdom and to feel good about it, but I don't necessarily, the energy is not that high. When you have a group of three or four people who view themselves as peers, when you're in an interaction together, there's a lot of different opinions about what's happening, and people disagree. And there's a lot more energy in the room, and people kind of stress test things and figure it out. And there's like an element of competition almost. Like, well, you did this, but I did this. And, you know, and there's like this always like striving for more and more, like pressures the group up. So if you've never tried this, if you've been sponsoring guys in AA for years, but you've never tried to do like a dynamic where there's three of you in the room or four of you in the room, like why not try it? Like, Jesus didn't mentor people one-on-one. We don't see that. There's one-on-one conversations occasionally, but there's no mentoring. The way he developed people was three-on-one or one-on-12 or bigger groups. Try it. And if you have a mentor right now, ask that mentor, would you mind if we got a couple other people? We just tried this out? Maybe you're in the room today and you're like, well, Jake, how do I even get started with this? I don't have a mentor and I'm not mentoring anybody. What do I do? So here's our second kind of half of the sermon. If you want to get to this group of four-ish people, I don't know that it's exactly magical to have four. I don't think it's bad, though, to just copy what Jesus did. But maybe you could try it with three people. Maybe try it with five people. How do you get here? Well, again, let's look at how did Jesus get his groups of folks that he impacted? If we look at Luke 12, this is right before he gets the 12 disciples. It says, one of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. Verse 13, when morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he designated apostles. Do you ever think about, like, Jesus spent the whole night praying before he appointed these guys? Now, I don't know, was Jesus trying to figure out who he should have appointed as disciples? I'm not sure. Was Jesus praying for those 12 that they could be ready for what he was about to do? I don't know exactly what he was praying about. But the pattern to copy here is Jesus spent a chunk of time praying, and then he picked some people to influence, right? And I think it's worth just copying that. Like, what if it's not like, oh, I'm going to pray for 17 years about who I should impact. What if just this week you decided, I'm going to take a big chunk of time for me? Kind of like Daniel was talking about, that might not be very, you know, that might be 10 minutes for you. It might be 5 hours. It might be all night. But what day this week would you pray and say, Jesus, who are the three other people you want me to be closest to? Who are the three other people you want me to be sharpened with? So already you get to decide that. You get to say, like, yep, Jake, I'm on board for that, or no, I'm not. But if you're on board for it, like, go ahead and decide right now. Like, nothing's stopping you. We've got little pieces of paper in front of you. You want to write it down? Like, maybe tomorrow you don't have to work. Maybe, I don't know if it'll be raining or not, but you find some place to be dry, and you just say, I'm going to pray and find out who are three people that I think God wants me to be really close to. So that's the first. We're just literally copying Jesus here, or copying the principle at least. So in case you like pictures, you know, Jesus prayed and then he picked 12. The picking of the 12, why does that matter? If you just pray, God, bring some people into my life, and that's all you do, I don't think it'll work out for you. I think you need to pray, you need to take your best guess at who Jesus is telling you, and then you need to go talk to those people face to face and say, Marcus, would you be in this thing that I'm trying to do where we meet every week and we get closer to God together? You got to go and actually have the conversation. If you invite people and they say no, like, or whatever, like, maybe pray some more, okay? But you have to go have the conversation. One more verse. This is back to the verse we already read, but there's several key principles here that Jesus did. So Jesus took these three guys, Peter, James, and John, with him. He led them up a mountain where they were all alone. Because maybe now you're thinking about, okay, what if I get my three guys on Monday afternoon? What do I do with them? What do we do together? The reality is you have to get some time alone, okay? That's going to be where this falls apart for a lot of us, right? Let me tell you a little story about this, or a little dynamic. So here in the top left, we've got some dandelions. If you think about most of the yards you see in Independence, most of the yards you see in Independence, they only have room for dandelions, right? Or like as far as like, not that there's only dandelions, but they're full of grass or weeds or something. Dandelions don't mind that. You tell dandelions, like, oh, this is all crowded. They're like, we don't mind a crowd, you know, like just nestle right up, you know, like more the merrier, you know, like they'll just come in and fight for space, right? They don't care how crowded it is. Weeds are like that. Things you don't really want don't mind if your life is already full, right? How many of your problems have been like, oh, you're too busy for me right now. I'll go somewhere else. You know, like that doesn't how it works, right? Tell you about a different sort of plant. I don't know if you guys have ever tried to plant peppers in Missouri. Here's some bell peppers here. I've had a lot of bell peppers that like the growing season is winding down and they're still green and they're not supposed to be green. And I'm starting to think like, did I get the green ones on accident? I didn't. I never get the green ones. I like the other ones better. But it takes them forever to turn, takes them forever to be right, because Missouri is not really warm enough to do peppers right, you know? And so, like, you gotta have a hot summer for them to really grow well, right? Peppers don't just grow in people's yards, and they don't just ripen up in Missouri on their own, right? In order to have peppers work out, you gotta clear some space. You gotta plant them early and give them a lot of time. And if you're going to have three people be really close to you, and not just individually close to you, but all four of you are close to each other, it's going to be more like that pepper scenario, okay? You're going to have to clear some space in your yard. You're going to have to clear some space in your life. You're going to have to say, this group of people is important enough to me that I'm going to get alone with them. I'm going to go do things with them. Most things are not important enough to you to clear weekly time in your schedule. Like, that's true. Most of you came here today and you're already busy. So is it worth it to you to say, Jesus had three really close people. I'm going to have three really close people. Because you're going to have to choose it. It won't just happen. Okay, think about the end of that verse. They go up on a mountain all by themselves. You and the three people with you, like, it's not just like call each other on the phone or do a Facebook like group and call it good. Like, you need to share some experiences together. You need to go somewhere together and do something together. These guys climb a mountain, and then Jesus gets vulnerable and shows him the real him, right? When was the last time you did something with three other people that was significant? If you're not having very many significant conversations in your life, maybe it's because you're not doing experiences with people and then opening up. Again, this takes some time, okay? One more thing about the Transfiguration. That's the only time on Jesus' whole time here on earth where he shows himself without any sort of barrier, and he only shows it to three people. Don't hear me wrong, like Jesus was never hypocritical. Jesus was never not himself. But he couldn't show the full him to everybody all the time at that level. It's too intense, too precious. And we've all known this. Maybe you've shared a story about somebody that died or somebody you really cared about or something really deep in your heart, and you shared it with too many people. You shared it with a group of folks and somebody didn't really respect it. Somebody trampled on it and it made you never want to share that story again, right? The Transfiguration, Jesus just couldn't show that to a crowd and have people take it right. But Jesus could show it to these three guys. And that's how he chose to do it. You need people in your life where every single part of you has space to be there and to be fully exposed. It's incredibly precious if you can get there. And if you're that vulnerable with those three other people, they'll be able to be vulnerable with you, and that's where people's lives can really change. If you have three people in your life who are pushing you towards Jesus, you're not going to have some huge train wreck just spring up out of nowhere. It's not like some affair is going to just destroy you or some relapse is going to just destroy you. That stuff has warning signs. And if there's a group of three people that know the real you fully, you're going to be protected from so much of that, like, explosion stuff, okay? So Daniel's going to come up and lead us in our time of response. Daniel and I get together, Coach Daniel and I get together every week, and we pray before these services. We got together this morning. We prayed that God would bless any of you who want to do this, that he would make you successful in finding the right people, right? So you can come down front and have someone pray with you that you'd find the right people. You can come and pray about whatever you want, but you get to decide, like, do you want to copy Jesus? Like, Jesus lived his life this way. Do you want to do the same thing? Let's pray. Jesus, I pray you would bless each one of us that try to follow your lead this week. Each one of us that say, God, show me the right people to open up to, the right people to challenge and be challenged by. It's in your name we pray. Amen.